From Southern California, this is The Circle of Insight, a show about everything in psychology. Hear the latest in news and views on psychology. Our motto is simple. Wherever there is psychology involved, we are there. And now, here's your host of The Circle of Insight, Carlos Vasquez.
From wherever you are around the world, welcome and thank you for joining us. Today we're going to be exploring Jesus in a very different light. We have with us today is Dr. Amy Jill Levine. She comes to Professor of New Testament and Jewish Studies at Vanderbilt University. Welcome to The Circle, Dr. Levine.
Happy to be with you.
This is really interesting. You have a great amount of books. I mean, I can't even spend time detailing to everybody, but the two books we will be talking about in probably two segments. First one is Short Stories by Jesus, which is right here, is a fantastic book. I highly recommend. The other one is The Misunderstood Jew, another fascinating book. So, Dr. Levine, what got you motivated to be a professor of New Testament studies and Jewish studies?
Yeah, well, I'm Jewish myself, and I recognize that not every Jew wants to grow up to be a professor of New Testament studies, let alone to teach in a divinity school. But I find Jesus absolutely fascinating. I have sometimes Christian envy that we don't get to read the parables in the synagogues. But what I find in Jesus is he speaks from the heart of Judaism and he speaks to Jews. So for me, studying Jesus is in effect recovering part of my own history. And I also like stories, and he's one of the best storytellers I think the world has ever seen.
That's something that's fascinating too. I know a lot of Jewish people either take it as a positive or a negative that a whole religion was based on a Jewish person, Jesus, but it doesn't really coincide with Judaism.
Well, it doesn't, and things don't have to either. When we start worrying about where religion comes from, frequently I think we look to issues of logic. You know, if you just put all the dots together, everything would be the way it was. But that's not how religion works. Faith is not like Sudoku, that if you simply fill in the right little blocks, everybody comes up with the same answer. Because faith isn't based on logic, it's based on love, and love has nothing to do with logic. So what do we have here? We have paradox, we have mystery, we have surprise, and that's the way religion works.
So let's talk about your most recent book, Short Stories by Jesus. What motivated you to write it, and what is it all about?
It's about the parables, and not about all of them, because otherwise the book would be like 800 pages. But what I was trying to do is get a sense of what those short stories by Jesus would have sounded like to the people who first heard them. So to a group of Jews in Galilee or a group of Jews in Bethlehem, when they heard those stories, what messages were they taking? What challenges were they hearing? By the time the parables make their way into the Gospels, they've already partially been domesticated because Matthew, Mark, and Luke have set them with particular contexts and particular audiences. So part of what I tried to do is get back behind the Gospels to that first audience.
Now, do you think the Gospel writers had any influence on the stories itself? Did they change a little bit, like you said, to fit the context of where they were being spoken?
Oh, I think so. The Gospel writers are, like any writer in antiquity, they're not performing objective history. They're saying, here's the good news of this person whom they claim to be the Messiah. And they're writing to people who are followers of Jesus or potential followers of Jesus. So they're already going to spin these stories in their particular way. This is the same thing that people do when they get up in the pulpit today and they preach on this. They're not just reading the text. They're going to provide a context by which people in the congregation should understand that material. It doesn't make them wrong, but it does suggest that they've moved outside of one historical context and into another.
Did you take into consideration the temporal differences? The writers, I know, at least from records that we have, they wrote a lot of these Gospels many decades after Jesus' death. Does that take into consideration how they viewed life at that point in time compared to how they might have viewed life during Jesus' day?
Oh, absolutely. And not only do we have a shift in time, Jesus dies sometimes between the years 26 and 36. And we know that because that's when Pontius Pilate was governor. The gospel writers are writing probably in the 60s to the 100s. So they're at least a generation or two after the time of Jesus. Moreover, Jesus spoke Aramaic and the gospels are written in Greek. So whenever we shift languages, we're always going to get a shift in connotation of terms or a shift in nuance. But the thing about storytelling, and this we know from cross-cultural studies, storytelling, the basic plots, the basic characters, tend to remain the same. And I think for parables, I think we've got a pretty good sense of earlier material, in part because I can watch the gospel authors, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, wrestling with some of those messages and trying to figure out how best can I portray this. So I do think it's an act of historical imagination, but we can still get, I think, a pretty good sense of what Jesus might have actually said.
Any differences between the East and the West, the ones that were influenced by Greek thought, the ones influenced by Roman thought?
By the time we get to Jesus, they've had 300 years of Greek history and a good solid century or so of Roman rule. So it's all part of a mix. There's no pristine Judaism that's not influenced by the broader imperial context.
What is your favorite parable?
It depends upon what I happen to be talking about at the time or what I happen to be teaching. I like parables that have a very clear challenge or a kind of aha or got you moment, like the Good Samaritan, I think is just brilliant. I adore the parable that we normally call the parable of the prodigal son, which I think is a bad title. I like the parables that deal with women, and there are a lot of them. A woman who hides yeast and dough, or an importuning widow who threatens to give a judge a black eye, or a woman who loses a coin and then celebrates with her girlfriends when she finds it.
Welcome to Adelante. This is Adelante Recovery, and my name is Yvette Kuglin, and I'm part of the staff.
Adelante Recovery Center has helped people in dual diagnosis for 5 years. We accept most PPO insurances and provide luxury accommodations and 24-hour support. To speak with an admissions counselor, call 1-888-242-4450.
A lot of time, we don't even know what's wrong with us, and sometimes we need to get away to figure that out. So if you want to go for a little retreat out in Corona Del Mar, which is a confidential location, we're here to help. So we're only a phone call away. Thank you.
What does it say about women during that time? Have we ever explored that?
Oh, I have, as a matter of fact. You know, I'm a Jew, I'm interested in Jewish history. I'm a woman, I'm interested in women's history. And, you know, and what we can find out not only from the parables, but from the broader gospel context is much about Jewish women's lives in the first century. Like, they have access to their own money. They own their own homes. They have freedom of travel. They hang out with other women and party with them. They show up in synagogues. They show up in the temple in Jerusalem. They speak out in public and nobody ever says, oh my God, it's a woman in public. How horrible. I'm not saying that first century Judaism was some sort of egalitarian wonderland. It wasn't. But it wasn't the epitome of horrible patriarchal misogyny either.
Very fascinating. Anything else that you can tell us about that book and the short stories by Jesus?
I can tell you lots. The only thing is, how much time do we have? I can tell you that the parables are challenging. So that if we hear a parable and we think, oh, isn't that nice or isn't that special, or we feel comforted by it, we're probably not listening very well.
Now,
because Jews knew that parables were not, you know, statements of the obvious, and they weren't children's stories. They were designed to challenge and to indict and to provoke. We also know that parables frequently come with a dash of humor. And the more we know about that first century context, the funnier the parables become. And I think Jesus had a fabulous sense of humor, and that humor comes out in a number of his stories. The idea of the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant. I mean, you just start with that, and that's a little odd. You know, the kingdom of heaven is like Mother Teresa, that's fine, or Martin Luther King Jr., that's fine. But the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant. It's a little weird. Who, you know, searching for fine pearls, which is a really upscale item that most Jews probably never even saw.
Oh, really?
And upon finding one pearl of great value, he went and sold all that he had and bought it, which is just bizarre when you think about it. Today we would call that putting all your eggs in one basket. But, you know, at least an egg you can eat. What are you going to do with a pearl? So you can start looking at this very bizarre scenario, and you can start playing with it, and then it becomes interesting.
Now, you mentioned the Jewish faith. Do you think the Jews look at the allegories? I mean, or do Christians look at the parables of Jesus the same way the Jews look at the allegories in the Old Testament?
I don't think that most of these stories are actually allegories. I mean, an allegory is everything has a one-to-one correspondence with something on the outside world. And parables don't function like that. Sometimes there is a correspondence being, if there's a vineyard, it's probably got something to do with Israel because we recognize that. But, you know, not all kings represent God and not all dads represent God. Sometimes kings are just kings and sometimes dads are just parents trying to figure out what they're trying, how to raise their kids appropriately. But the followers of Jesus as Jews already knew that there were parables in their own scriptures, what the church would call the Old Testament or the synagogue called the Tanakh. Nathan's parable of the ewe lamb told to King David over the, you know, adultery with Bathsheba and killing of Bathsheba's husband. Or Jotam's parable of the trees, and wisdom literature has lots of parables in it. On the Roman side, there were also parable-like stories. The best example here would be Aesop's fables. And they're all designed to challenge.
So when you look at the, when you're in your book, are you looking to explain the parables more so? Or are you looking to see how they were being interpreted by the people at that time?
In a sense, yes, but explain may be too strong. I'm trying to bring out the cultural clues that people would have picked up, the resonances that they would have heard, and then try to reconstruct the thoughts that might have occurred to them. I don't think most parables have a single answer. I don't think the Bible as a whole is an answer book. I think the Bible is a book that helps us ask the right questions, and the parables do exactly the same thing. They interrogate us. They ask us to explore our own values. They ask us to figure out how best do we get along in a family context, or how best do we get along with our neighbors, or how best do we get along as Jews in the Roman Empire. So they're provocative.
Well, are you ready for your fastball question here?
I suppose so.
Fastball question. Do you think Jesus' parables or Jesus would have been a bestseller in today's world?
Oh, I think so. And you know what? I think he would have been very offended by the idea that his stuff would have been a bestseller, because that presumes that people would have to pay money for it. And Jesus is more interested in teaching rather than in the royalties that might accrue from that.
But the kingdom was a merchant.
It's a merchant in search of the kingdom. And you know what? After he gets that pearl, I think he takes himself out of the retail market.
Well, Dr. Levine knocks him right out of the park. Thank you so much. Thank you again for being on The Circle. You don't want to miss part two, which is going to come up in a little bit. We're going to talk about The Misunderstood Jew, another fabulous book by Dr. Levine. Once again, thank you for being on The Circle, Dr. Levine. Thank you for joining us as well. If you want to get a hold of Dr. Levine, where do we go?
Yeah, easiest place would probably be Amazon or any local bookstore.
Great. Also, I would recommend if you want to hear her, you can hear her on The Teaching Company as well. She's got great courses that she teaches on there. Remember, our motto is simple. Wherever there's psychology involved, even in the times of Jesus, we are there. See you next time, everyone.